Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here we are, it's the 11th already of February. Jeez.
And, yeah, February goes quick. Although this is, isn't this leap year?
Is it?
I think so.
Let me take a look.
Yeah, we need to know these things.
No.
It's not. I have been misinformed. So that that full day at the spa that I was promised on the 28th is not happening.
The 28th, this is the 20, a leap year is 29 days.
So the 28th may be still good. So there's no 29th day. So the two days that I was going to spend at the spa is no good.
No. No, you can spend all the time you want at the spa.
All right. So we'll still be there, even though it's not the 29th.
Yeah.
All right. Just checking. So what's new in your world?
Nothing.
Nothing at all?
No, not really.
Got a lot of bullshit going on.
It rained, finally. It rained in California. We got a foot.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's, is that good?
Yeah.
We had a lot of rain down here in Florida, and my house is right on the area where there's the drain. And it seems that that particular drain constantly gets filled up with leaves when it rains. So we just get it all backed up. So you have to walk out there knee deep and start pushing the leaves away until you get enough of a clearing so that it drains. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. No, every place has, that leaves are a problem. If you want trees, you're going to have to deal with it.
Yeah. So we got a lot of bullshit going on. I think I'm going to probably make sure to utilize that word quite often, because it seems that from where we were just about a week ago or so, when you and I were talking and we were in the level of a downtrend for the markets, it seems like, hey, it's all over. Markets turned around.
We thought there was a correction. I don't think we thought that it was all over.
No. I mean the market.
Oh, you mean the correction, the so-called correction.
Yep. So-called. That's a good one. The fact is that we saw another V-shaped recovery from a move that was probably about 3 weeks long or so, and all of a sudden in 3 days we got an incredible recovery that, and we call it V-shape because it comes down, it hits a point, and then just doop, right back up.
Right.
And the reasons are what's the funny part of all this. And it's all about it started on Thursday, last Thursday, when there was a reversal day from a down to an up, and then Friday when we saw the jobs number come out, and the news was all giddy about the fact that, hey, markets are up because, well, the jobs numbers, the jobs report that came out. Now, meanwhile, the jobs number came out and missed terribly.
Yeah.
And the only thing that was good, you could probably say, is the unemployment rate. And in fact, that was better, and it wasn't due to necessarily the participation rate, because that was actually higher. So, which is kind of weird, because if the last couple of months missed so awful, you know, in an awful way, how did the participation rate go up and the unemployment rate go down? You know, it's kind of weird.
They just finagle these numbers. If I'm looking at the shadow stats, which I did immediately thereafter, the unemployment rate is still creeping up. Right now, the real unemployment rate, based on the way it would be calculated during the Depression, for a perfect comparison, it's about 23.9, maybe close. It's just about edging on the 24%.
But you know what? It's a funny thing that, you know, in the days in World War II and prior, the Russians and a variety of other governments would utilize propaganda to populate the knowledge base of individuals, right? And whatever they wanted to send out, they would. And it was, you know, we look down on that saying, oh my gosh, look at that awful type of practice that goes on. But meanwhile, we have the media here that are a bunch of saps. You know, the media just is, I don't know if it's a younger group or if it's just
it's the younger group that works cheap.
Maybe, and they have no desire. They have no desire, because if they go against the norm, what happens is there's a big backlash. Nobody believes them, right? They're just crazy kooks.
Right, and they get fired.
Right. So then today we had some more information that came out, and the markets were up really nicely. They actually turned lower this morning after Yellen's pre-prepared testimony was released at 8:30 in the morning. Futures were up about 6 or 7 on the S&P. They came down to about maybe plus 1 or 0. And then all of a sudden, things started to pop when the open happened. And why was that? The reason? Well, because, wow, the commentary really showed that Yellen was going to do something. Well, I read it. I went over it. It's business as usual, which is not bad, but it's not anything to really get excited about because they're going to be cutting back on the bond purchases, and that's going to be continued. And basically, she didn't say anything that was new.
No.
And what's really kind of interesting is that we saw the market move up dramatically. And I guess you have to look at, okay, let's look at all of the markets and kind of think about what's wrong with this picture. So we saw that after the testimony and after the initial testimony was released and after the congressional discussion with her, the dollar was up. Well, dollar being up doesn't necessarily bode well for the commentary that there's going to be additional stimulus, right? Gold was up, which makes no sense at all. Bonds were sold. The markets were up, and the volume was pathetic. And I actually attached a snapshot of today's volume across U.S. And European markets. And you'll notice over the last 3 or 4 days, ever since we saw this recovery happen, it happened on anemic volume. No participation.
Does this remind you of anything?
Yeah, it reminds me of every time it's happened before.
Right.
So we see this, you know, a big sell-off, and you look at institutions really coming in and taking down some positions. And then the next thing you know, you see that nobody's actually buying, but there's...
They're not selling.
Right. That's exactly right. There's no selling pressure is the difference. So, you know, I guess it's really hard to attribute the market move to Yellen, although, again, the news is going to be, you know, looking at that.
Well, you know, I was actually expecting to see the Dow break the 15,000 mark and hit the high 14s or 14.5 or something like that. And I was very disappointed. And now it's going to be 16,000 again tomorrow or the next day.
Yep. So, again, nothing's changed. It looks like, you know, while we did see that there was a 5% market correction on the Dow in the beginning of the year, I think it's backed off to about 2% or 2.5% down at this point. The NASDAQ is actually positive for the year, and that's because of Apple doing its thing. You know, it dropped down pretty hard after earnings, and then because they had $14 billion buyback in the first few days. Tim Cook, one of the first times you ever saw somebody from Apple say this, that he was very surprised to see the Apple stock move down so dramatically after the earnings. And that perks everybody up a bit, right?
I was stunned, he said.
Stunned. Right. But this is different. You never saw really Apple talking about their stock before. So whether they got the...
Oh, that's an interesting point.
Right?
I never thought about it, but you're absolutely correct.
Yeah, I mean,
everybody else is talking about it, but Apple, they were, you know, never talking about it.
It was something that didn't matter. I mean, it mattered, but whatever it was, and, you know, they just do their thing, and they're not really paying attention to the stock price. But meanwhile, they go in and buy $14 billion worth of their stock back. That gets everybody all excited, saying, wait a minute, you know, all of a sudden... We got a company that was never interested in where their stock was, and they have a open-ended buyback plan and the X amount of dollars, and they went in and bought it because they thought it was such a bargain. And not only did they think it was a bargain, so that gives us the signal that things are, you know, good and maybe something's happening, but they now have a general MO that they're going to be looking at the stock, and, you know, if it gets too low, they're going to be actively involved.
Yeah.
That's definitely a change. There's no question about that.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, but I thought that it would be interesting to play Round the Horn. This is a little game where we look at why things are happening. And I went and I picked up the futures contracts from 4 or 5 different levels. So we look at currency. We look at the what's happening this evening, the Nikkei. We're looking at the NASDAQ. And we're looking at the S&P futures. And I thought it'd be interesting to look at some of the cause and results of what's going on. So if you could go and pick up that graphic that says go round the horn, see that?
Yeah, there's two of them.
Yeah, pick up the first one.
Let's take a look at it. What's up?
All right, so on the top left, we have the S&P futures. It's called the AT-ES, the mini futures. And on the top right, we have the NASDAQ futures. The bottom right, we have the Nikkei futures, and the bottom left, we have the Japanese yen. Now, this evening, Japan came out with their numbers on, what did they come out with? They came out with their industrial numbers, where they look at the how much is it's a core number that looks at the machine orders, and they had a fall of 15.7% versus an estimate of a negative 4%.
Nope.
Yep. It missed every analyst that was out there, and the core machine, went up 6.7% versus an estimated plus 17%. So let's agree that that's a weak number, right?
Okay.
So when that number came out, which would make sense, you would think that the yen would start dropping. And you can see the arrow there on the bottom left. And the first thing that happens is that this is a bad number. So the yen starts dropping and it's moving down here. Now, the second thing that happens is as the yen drops, you can see concurrently at the same time, the Nikkei moves higher. Well, the Nikkei moves higher and the yen's dropping. So what happens? Well, you see the NASDAQ and the S&P 500 futures start moving higher. Now, is this because of the fact that things are better? No. It's a simple currency transaction. So you go around the horn and you get the currency that moves lower. Well, that's good because Japan in general will do better. The exports will do better when you have a lower currency. So all of a sudden you see that the Nikkei actually picks up on the bad news. And then because the Nikkei is picking up, you know, the world has to have, everybody has to be on board with everything that goes on. You see that, well, the NASDAQ starts moving higher and so does the S&P. And this is kind of the really, there's a couple of words I'd use here, the screwed up relationship of what's going on because of how you have these program traders and you have this really odd relationship between the currencies now and the futures or the markets. So you get this really warped move where if numbers were much better, you would have actually probably seen a market come down. That's a hard thing to really grasp as an investor, isn't it?
I think it's impossible. I think, it's very difficult and it's not well explained.
And the problem is you start, you know, going along with this.
You have to kind of understand it at some gut level.
Yeah, it's very difficult.
And I think the only way to really do it right is you not only have to understand, you got to be all in and think, yeah, it makes nothing but sense.
Yeah, nothing but sense that there's no sense to it, that if it's the worse it is, the more the governments will be involved. And that's a pretty scary thing because one day, I think, I don't know, but it seems, one day there's going to be a time when, you know, this relationship breaks and breaks pretty hard. And the problem is that governments would have to get out of the process and they're not likely to do so for a very long time. This is probably the longest running intervention that I've ever seen. What's going on these days?
Well, I think it's coincident with the 30s and 1930s, the interventions that were taking place then that you never saw.
You never saw them, right? Okay, so but it was I don't think it was as globally coordinated.
I think the 70s reflected a lot of this.
The 70s, but the 70s were more of a they were slowing things down because of inflation.
Well, there was stagflation.
Yeah, well, that was right.
And then they had to do price fixing.
But I don't think
the Republicans were all in on price fixing.
I don't think it was as prevalent on a global basis. I don't think.
I'd have to think about it.
Now go to round the horn two.
There's just one chart here.
Yeah, it's one chart. This is the
and it says six. Yeah, where's five?
Well, we had five before. Didn't we have five before?
No.
This is five.
Okay.
So it's a leap year. So you get that you miss a. What happens here now is all of a sudden at the same time you notice that this is the US dollar and Turkish lira. At the same time, the US dollar moves lower, making the Turkish lira look like it's better. You want the Turkish lira to get stronger. Why is that? I'm not exactly sure why. But you got these weird, this is exactly the same time, this is exactly what's gone on, and you see that this whole round the horn process of where and what is affected by this, you know, what's happening is they're probably selling off the yen and buying the lira on this, selling off the dollar and buying the lira because there's a worse number. Now, on top of that, let's add one more component to this. At the same time, right about the same time here, a little bit after, China's export numbers came out. These are the numbers that have been looked upon and frowned upon by not only everyone, but including China, saying there's a real problem with our export numbers because there's some things that are being hidden in there and we're really concerned about them. And wouldn't you know it, they come out better than expected. Okay? So they come out better than expected, and there is an immediate response that, boom, the futures move up, you know, a couple points, nothing major, but move up a couple of points on top of what's going on. So you got worse news out of Japan, and that's good because it's good for the currency, you know, currency trade. And then you got better news out of China, even though it may be total horseshit with their numbers, and they admit it, but let's just go along with it anyway, and that moved futures higher. So you got this whole process of, oh, who cares why, but let's just buy in. And that's kind of what's been going on. It doesn't really matter. There's this money floating around, there's currency transactions that are offsetting each other. They're putting money from, you know, selling this currency and buying this equity. And then you have a market that was, let's say, down 3 or 4 points on this, the ES and NASDAQ. It goes to flat to positive on no volume. Now, let's kind of, since I did this, was about an hour ago in the evening of Tuesday, let's take a look real quickly at where the Nikkei is. Hold on. Let's see. Yep. The Nikkei is up almost 1% now after it was up about 35 basis points earlier on this bad news. So the bad news pushed up the Nikkei almost 1%.
Wow.
Now, of course, the headline will be something like, Nikkei moves up on the Yellen testimony. Or the, let's see what China is. Let's take a look at that. The Hang Seng is up about 1%, the Hong Kong market. And the Shanghai is up, it's kind of flat. It was down a little bit earlier. They're not buying all their stuff. But, you know, basically you moved up because you had better numbers in China and you had worse numbers in Japan. What else could you want? So how about some
employment? That's what I'd want. Yeah, well, nobody cares.
Good luck. Doesn't matter. All that matters is that we get the potential for more stimulus. It's all that matters in these markets right now, is that there's more potential stimulus coming. Anyway, there is my combination of my bullshit alert and my around the horn game for this evening. I got to tell you, I would venture to say that unless I would think that we're getting close to, you know, this second round of hope, because that's I think where we are right now. You know, you have this whole episode of markets dropping off. Wow, great bargain. Let's buy in because it always goes up from there.
Yeah, and hope, no change.
I think we're in the second hope. I mean, that's where people come in that haven't been in before and finally get.
Keeps going up and down. You can call it a Bob hope.
You need a little noise maker on that. But with that, I want to show you something. There's been some currency commentary about the emerging markets that keeps coming out. Okay. And there's a chart that I gave you there that shows the this interesting chart that was presented by, I'm not sure which analyst did this, but it looks at the correlation between the MSCI All Country World Index, which is the equity markets around the world, and it puts next to it the emerging market currencies. And you can see since 2008, 2007, there was a great correlation between the two, right? And then in 2012, 2013, that started breaking off.
What is this telling me?
Well, in theory, this tells you that one of two things. It was totally just coincidence that the emerging market currencies and the world indices moved together for a while, and they broke off, so, you know, nothing else matters, who cares? Or it tells you, which this analyst is trying to present, that in 2012, there was this move that currencies in the emerging markets started moving lower, yet the markets around the world continued higher. And what's happened is that the divergence is getting so great where we need to see one or the other pull up or down in the direction, because the divergence is a problem, and the probability is we're going to see stocks falling much further to make the difference up between where stocks are now in their level and emerging market currencies. That's if you buy into
stocks. Are we talking about emerging market stocks?
We're talking about all the world. This is the all,
so the whole world, just because of this.
Yeah.
So I'm owning a share of General Motors at price X. It's, and now the Venezuelan peso is down, and so my What happens to me? I'm not seeing
that happens to you. Nothing there. But if we're looking at bigger picture, we're looking at the index of indices of the equity markets around the world and the basket of emerging market currencies. If you put those together and look at the correlation, it was very tight for, 10 years.
No, I see that, but I don't understand how splitting like this is going to be a problem.
Well, what they're saying here is, this is the argument by this analyst, what they're saying is that the equity markets have yet to properly price in the fact that emerging market currencies are falling off, meaning that they're becoming much weaker, and as they become weaker, it's much more difficult for them to buy the products of the countries around the world. Therefore, they're really not able to participate in the increasing demand.
Oh, okay, I get it. Because we're dealing with a world economy,
right?
These guys by the day can't afford the raw materials at the old price because their money's worth less.
Yep.
And so they have to spend more to make the same product that they want to export, which is now going to have to be more expensive, which will slow down their economy. And no one is going to buy the products.
Right, and it hits the entire world.
Would be true, right? Yep. Well, who counts as an emerging market nowadays?
Emerging market would be lots of areas of Latin America, some of Asia.
So all of South America.
Yeah, pretty much.
Probably Southeast Asia.
Southeast Asia. You have Africa.
Africa, okay, whatever.
Some of the smaller countries, it's the very small countries.
The Western African area.
Right, some of the smaller countries in...
So that also means that because of this divergence, that if I was an investor, I could go find fire sale prices in some of these countries or wait for this to bottom out.
Yeah, that's true. And then you have certain areas in Europe, like Turkey's emerging market, all the stands, anything with stand in it.
Yeah.
Pakistan, Uzbekistan.
Looks like an investment opportunity.
It is in a way, but the question is, where is the investment opportunity? Is it in the emerging markets or is it it would be the long emerging markets, short developed markets. That would be the theory. That would be the theory. So, moving along.
This is interesting. Yeah. Do you have a link to that guy's article?
I could probably pull it and send it. I will do so.
Why don't you put it on the DHM Plug site?
Okay. I think it's a Bloomberg internal. I'll get the article. I can pull it. I'll pull it. Let's see what else we got.
Summary or something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Let's see here. Oh, this is kind of a couple of interesting things here. I don't know where we should start with this one, but this one had me laughing pretty good. That, I think it was the bobsled racer from the U.S. who was stuck in the bathroom at the Olympics?
Yeah, that's funny.
And then
had to kick his way out.
Yeah, big hole in the door. There's a big problem with many of the hotels in Russia, it seems, where the Olympics is being held in Sochi, that many of the hotels and rooms and things aren't finished. And the, bathrooms are just not there, and I think it's over.
I think this is exaggerated.
Which part?
The whole thing, because I know that they've already had hotels in Sochi. It's a famous resort area, so there's plenty of hotels already. But then to take the extra load, they build a bunch of new places that were fancy.
Right.
And I suppose one or two of them are not up to par. I mean, it's Russia. What do you expect? I mean, Russia. We're not talking about, Manhattan, where it would be the same problem.
Yeah. Well,
I just can't get worked up about these complaints.
Let's not get worked up about this, but let's just talk about the funny story here, that this bobsled racer from the U.S. was stuck in his bathroom, and he couldn't get out for whatever reason. I'm not sure how this worked. And he had to kick his way out, and he gets out, right? So his tweet he's stuck on the elevator the next day.
He's just jinxed.
Who knows what's going to happen next here? In Japan, they're detecting a massive cyber attacks in the latest report on an annual basis. 12 billion cyber attacks. Am I just looking at that number like it's a big number that's abnormal?
Does it mean, though? I mean, what is it, 12 billion pings on a website? Or there's not 12 billion websites that could be attacked.
No,
what's the number? What does it mean? What does 12 billion mean?
I guess it's 12 billion unique. Yeah, it would be unique pings or attacks on government. This is now government sites.
Oh, probably China.
Yeah,
it's over those islands.
And they keep on, so they're going to try to get in there somehow, nudge their way in and cause some trouble.
Somebody's making trouble.
You know, those islands, there's small little jobbies. They got a little oil going on there and all that. And why can't they just be friends and share?
Yeah, that's what I say.
Yeah. If nobody could just get along. Anyway, we did see that on to U.S. law. The Do Nothing Congress did something but nothing. They basically said that, hey, we're going to extend the borrowing limits through March 15th of 2015. And that's going to be free of any conditions or amendments, which Republicans initially sought. Now, what is, I'm serious, I don't understand. What is March 15th of 2015? Why is that date? What does it have to do? Is it the start of maybe the next election cycle? What is that?
I think it's some holiday, maybe. Or maybe it's a something mythical. I don't know. I just think it's arbitrary.
Yeah, they're not going to do anything arbitrary. It's got to be something to make the Democrats look bad. So there's got to be something in there.
March 15th. I don't know. Maybe there's some filing for something, or I don't know.
Mm.
It's a good question. Now that you mention it,
yeah, there's got to be
something.
So we'll
look into it. Well, this is no agenda material.
Yeah, no agenda, or our listeners. They're very smart. They could send us an email.
Somebody might come up with this. There's obviously a reason for March 15th, and it's, you're probably right. It's probably got something to do with embarrassing the other guys. So, interesting. Okay.
All right. Question. Do market correlations work? Now, you're really big into this whole idea of the cycles.
Yeah, cycles.
And cycles are really talking about different.
And there are cycles of correlations, too, by the way.
So there's correlations of correlations? Cycles of correlations.
There's correlations that match cycles. In other words, something will correlate, and it turns out that the correlation is a cycle. It's like the short skirt thing. A lot of this stuff is, these so-called coincident indexes.
Right, like the lipstick indicator.
Yeah, they're all like that.
So
who wins the Super Bowl and all these, there's a bunch of these things.
But the question is, when you look at what's called seasonality, look at, for example, you put a chart up of the price of oil. And let's say you put a one-year chart up, right, of what it is over a period. And then you go and you put all the 1 years below it of, different years. So, 2014 or 13, 2012. And you see that, wow, look at that spike in the, let's call it the March area, because, starting to get into the thought of summer and all that, that more oil is used. And seasonality shows that in March, there is something to be said about how oil does in fact go higher. Now, it may not go every single year, but more often than not, it may be that. So the question then is there a potential for this predictive nature of charts that show time? For example, the presidential election cycle, right? That's basically been that during certain periods of a first-term president that, you're going to get, and if it's a Democrat or Republican, and you get this kind of movement, and it's been relatively standard, and although it broke off recently in this latest 3 months. Take a look at this. This is a chart and with an overlay that I sent you that link that shows the Dow Jones Industrial Average in 1928 to 29.
I don't see it. Where is it?
A link in the middle there. It's
the correlations work. Yeah, tiny URL. Okay, got it. Oh, nice.
So this is a chart just to, we could put
by the way, people do this constantly.
Yeah, of course. And when it breaks off, they say, oh, no good anymore. But then when it, comes back, it's good. So here is, we're looking at it as a 1928 to 1929 Dow Jones Industrial Average. And then underneath it is the current period, same length of time underneath it. And it's adjusted for on a different axis so that you can see the similarities to it. Now, one of the things that happens is when you start adjusting these things to the axis, and you start changing the ranges, you can make all sorts of things look interesting.
Oh yeah, you can play with this stuff until it looks perfect.
Right, but there is a bit of a look, and it does have some similarities to it. The big question is that if you look at the 1928 to 29 markets, right now is pretty much the time where in that time period is where it starts to run up and then start roll over very hard. Went from about 350 to 200 in a matter of how long? Let's see, 6 months?
No, it was faster than that.
It was faster. Okay. Oh, yeah, it would be, right, no, it would be about 3 months, 2 months, right there. Yeah, I see what you mean.
A couple of months.
So the question now that's being asked, you saw this recent pop, which also happened in a similar time frame of the 28, 29 markets, Is this kind of the end game? And are we going to see this rollover? I don't know. I've seen a lot of these things, and every time they're identified, they blow.
I agree. Every time they identify one, it turns out to be bogus.
Right. So we'll see what happens here. But
By this chart, it would say that we're going to get a recovery to about 1650 or 1605, 1604, or something like that. And then it's going to collapse completely.
Yeah. I'm not sure what would cause that. But then again, maybe they didn't know what was going to cause that back then either. Because if you kind of.
Well, they never had an excuse for it. I have all the papers from that era, newspapers. And it's funny to read this stuff because they, especially the initial crash, which was the first down thing, and then it recovered just a little bit and then took a dive, which I don't see here's the problem with this whole thing. We didn't have that initial crash was from like, I don't know, 380 to like 270 or something like that from the looks of this.
Mm-hmm.
And that's huge in terms of percentage.
Right.
I mean, the market went down 50%.
Yep.
This little correction we've had, the market goes down, you already said it today, is like 2%,
mm-hmm.
3%.
Right.
So the absolute value here is completely bogus. I mean, we're looking at, this is apples and oranges that just happen to look similar if you tweak it enough. But I'm not buying it.
They should probably have done a similar axis where they give a similar pricing, just do a divisor.
That would be possible, and then this thing would look like it wouldn't match at all. This is just bull crap.
Now the couple of guys, let's give you some a little bit more.
The theme of the show, you said that's good.
Yeah, it's all bullshit. It's this is actually there's two guys that presented this. This is Tom McClellan, which I respect. I do respect him. He's a pretty good statistician and market observer, and also this is secondly was. The pattern just discovered, which I don't know how look what I discovered. It looks the same, by Tom DeMarc, who's a pretty well-known investment guy. Now, the thing about Tom DeMarc, I don't know if you know him, he uses this very strange model to predict where things are going for a market or for commodity. And it's a counting mechanism. And they also do this in Japan a lot. This is a... he has a model that is...
do you use all your fingers or fingers and toes?
Yeah, you can use a little more because it goes up to 13. You use a 9, a 9, 9, 13, and there's this weird thing. You do a count of when markets are moving, let's say, higher, and when the market is higher from the last day and the day before, and you put
this
put
is like
one.
Horse racing and the Dow theory.
But I got to tell you something. The guy is well-respected. A lot of major players use his work, which is amazing. And he has, on a regular basis, they publish his predictions. I can't tell you how many times that they failed, but that something's going to roll over or move higher or whatever it may be. Because when it gets to this magic 13 number, through the calculation of, and it's usually in progressive, and you have to see it going up, 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 and you get one and two and three, and it has to be in sequence. So you get this sequence. I think it calls a TD sequence. They call it the actual indicator. When you get this 13 number, all bets are off and you're going to see a reversal. I don't know where he came up with this calculation, but and why it works. Kind of like a Fibonacci. Why do Fibonacci's work? Because we wanted to. So what we do is we put a lot of credence in those levels, and therefore, if it reaches your 50% Fibonacci, we buy. Well, then if we're buying, everybody else is buying, right? If they're all looking at the same thing. And therefore,
yeah,
Fibonacci's
the problem.
Work.
MACD used to have this problem.
Right. And they all work. How is that? It's a miracle. No, it all works because you're all doing what it says. It's the stupidest thing. Which is causing which, right?
Yeah, the chicken and egg, tail wagging the dog. It's a bunch of comparisons.
Yep. So, anyway, we got that. We'll put that on the website as well. Bitcoin, I thought I had to mention this because it seems that here's some more reason not to get involved in this whole, disaster. The walls are seemingly starting to crumble around this. Bitcoin fell another, I think, about 28% or so in the last few days again, because one of the major Bitcoin operations, MT.GOX, I don't know if it's still down, but it was down. And one of the reasons is that something to do with hackers are exploiting some kind of something inside the wallet, the Bitcoin wallet, which allows you to withdraw money, but yet at the same time make it, I guess, look like you didn't withdraw the money so that you can have multiple withdrawals.
Oh, I didn't know anything about this.
There's something about this. That's why they're all suspending withdrawals. You know, so now Bitcoin wallet software is the problem in Bitstamp, another big one. And so now all of a sudden you have these withdrawals. You know, it's always the worst thing you could tell people is you can't have your money. You know, when you stop capital flows and, you know, whether it was in Greece or, you know, anywhere around the world that had times when they were putting on capital restraints, you know, people get really pissy. Start saying they can't have their money. It's one thing if their money's worth less. It's another thing saying you can't have your money. So I don't know. I wonder if MT Gox is, let's see if this is still open here. MT, I think it's MTGOX. Do I have this on here? Let's see. Yeah, I have it. I have it on my website. So it says, please wait. Let's see what's happening. MTGOX.com. Transferring. Oh, it's up. Is that true? The last is 5. Ooh, that moved down again. Wow. I'm looking at that. This is MTGOX.com. This is the one that is reliable, the one that was supposed to be the, you know, the best one,
right,
to look at. Bitcoin just went from, it's at what now, 564. So it was as high. I'm trying to look. Now this is theirs. I wonder if this is the right levels because it doesn't look like it really moved down very much. It was as high as maybe 600. Now it's 560. And then I'm trying to look here when it was. It was 6-8. Yeah, 12 o'clock this afternoon. It's February 10th, right? Yeah, 12 o'clock this afternoon is as high as 650, 700. So it's coming down pretty hard. Low is 550. The high was 609. I guess in, let's see, in the 1 week, let's look at the weekly chart. Yeah, dropped as low as 500 on February 10th at 10 in the morning. So they're beating this thing up pretty good. But they're open, you know, the most reliable. Sure,
Max Kaiser came out with his own version of Bitcoin.
What is it?
Is it called the Kaiser or the Max or something like that?
Eesh. Now what?
So, well, I mean, he's the one a lot of people think invented the Bitcoin. I think they worked the bugs out of the system, which is what you're witnessing, these kinds of problems. And now he can, I don't know. It's beyond me.
I tried to explain this to somebody who I tried to, what is Bitcoin? He said, I said, oh, really? I said, if I explain it, it's going to be more comp. You're going to understand it less. So I tried to explain it to him in using macaroni, a box of macaroni, you know, noodles.
And if you can make it so that one box of macaroni is all the noodles there are, right, ever.
That's exactly what I told him. I tried to explain it to him.
And you have to, at some point, if you want to, these noodles become so rare that they go up in price and you have to start cracking the noodles into pieces.
Yep.
To use them.
Right.
Yeah.
And the other thing was he was much more excited about the macaroni noodles because he could actually have one.
You made him hungry.
Well, there's actually one you could put in your hand, whereas Bitcoin you can't. There's no such thing, you know? Now we need to have some kind of sound effects, you know? And now for the stupid and ridiculous. Twitter is testing a change to their profile pages that are now going to be similar to Facebook's.
Why?
Yeah, I don't get it.
What's the point? They'll have likes.
Oh, man. I mean, I don't get it. I really don't get it. So what's the... Who looks at a profile page besides the fact of clicking the button that says follow? And why would you want to look at a profile page?
They don't tell you much.
Right. And if it did, it's not like you're... I don't know. The whole thing
It's not
is...
like you're hiring anybody off of Twitter.
I don't understand the whole thing. I mean, Twitter is... Really, it seems like they're almost, I know this sounds crazy, but it's like they're getting desperate or something. You know, there was a few things over the last couple of weeks that they're testing and doing. Now, you know, everything was fine and good, and, you know, when they weren't public, now they got to do all this crap. I guess to seem like they're doing something, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. In China, no, don't get shocked on this now. In China, there's
corruption
some,
in China?
Yes, corruption. Mm-hmm. There's a concern that possibly some news about stocks being taken over is leaking prior to the actual occurrence of and the announcement in the news.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's
seems
a
that,
shocker.
Yeah, I know. This is Auto Navi Holdings. It's the second company in 2 weeks that's seen its shares surging in the days leading up to a takeover announcement. And I guess they jumped about 13% over the February 6th and 7th period, the most among the biggest Chinese stocks traded in New York, before Alibaba came in to offer to buy the shares. Shanda Games soared 37% in the 7 days prior to saying on January 27th that it plans to take the company private. So somebody...
You know, when we do that, we always do it with puts and calls.
Yeah, right, exactly. I mean, why the heck would they just do it? You're right. Well, there could have been that going on in the background also. Who knows? But it's interesting that you know, there's this attention being paid to it. I mean, like, we don't know that this goes on. I mean, it goes on here, it goes on there. Here, maybe there's a little bit more hand-slapping. But, you know, there, it's almost part of the process, it seems. We'll see. CNBC finally has some worthwhile programming I want to bring to you.
Curling.
Yep. 5 p.m. Eastern. It's pretty much.
So what show did they have at 5 p.m. Eastern that
Fast
they're
Money,
bumping?
Fast Money. And then Kramer.
Fast Money.
Kramer.
Oh, okay.
Fast Money, Kramer. And I think also, depending on how long the curling.
So they bump Kramer?
Yeah.
For curling.
Yep.
Interesting.
And I think also Larry Kudlow. It's pretty much Olympics on all night on CNBC. After
they
five.
They finally got a clue.
Yeah.
Nobody's watching these shows anymore.
You've been watching the curling?
I didn't know it was on. I wish if you should have sent me an important text message.
I did send you, I think, a whole schedule.
Oh, well, I didn't see the curling, but now I'm going to start watching it.
Yep, 5 p.m. As a matter of fact, the next time, as of Wednesday morning at 3... I think it's the men's curling, and at, let's see, that's 3 a.m. Eastern, so that would be what time yours. That would be 12 p.m. your time.
Yeah.
You can watch curling. And then I think at 8 a.m. or so, there's a men's or women's curling. Now, an interesting thing, first of all, if you don't know anything about curling, it's an interesting game, but the first time in Olympic history tonight that a team got a 7-point score. It's got 7 stones in one round, in one end-to-end. There's only 8 stones.
Holy mackerel.
Yep, and it was against us, by the way. It was the British that nailed the women's.
Yeah, that's hard to believe.
Yep. They were doing pretty well. They got 7 stones in. That's pretty hard to do.
Yeah, because you usually get them bumped out by the other guys.
Right, a blind man can just throw it down the thing and get it, you know, hit a stone, right?
That's what I would do.
Exactly.
Hard as you can, see what happens.
Exactly. And just for anybody that's not knowing what this is all about, it's basically shuffleboard on ice.
Yeah.
I guess that's how we describe it.
With a little control on the backside where they can sweep the ice and make the thing curve a little bit.
And make a lot of noises. And you need to look up all, I think we talked about this last year, all the different terminology involved in this particular sport. There's a very long list of things. And it's kind of.
I would like to play this game.
You know, in Florida, they have the ice rinks. They convert part of the ice rinks into a curling area. It's like $60 for an hour.
Huh.
But I'm sure they have it by you.
I'd never heard of such a thing.
I bet you the ice arenas have it.
Well, most of them in California have gone out of business because of liability laws.
Oh. I would like to play a round of curling with you. You know, you and I against I don't know who else. You, myself, maybe Adam. 3 of us. We go against some other podcast group. What do you think?
Yeah. No, it'd be a podcast showdown.
All right. In California, I thought you'd mention, because you'd probably be all excited about this, the incredibly fast and very active involvement of the state in the greenhouse gas problem. And, you know, California is very progressive in this area, is looking to cutting emissions 80% by 2050.
Well, at least it's 2050.
Are we going to be alive?
The two of us.
Let's see here. I got
Seems unlikely. Yeah, I think we'd have to be in the hundreds.
We're going to be looking pretty ugly. Yeah, that's so. 2050 is the intent to get emissions down. You know, they do it this way because basically it sounds great that they're trying to cut emissions, and nobody's going to remember anyway when they don't do it.
No, it's true. So, there's been a bunch of these, you know, we're going to do this by so far out in the future that one or two changes in administrations, the Republicans take over, and this is, they just pull the law.
Yep, exactly.
I mean, we've got 45 years to pull the law. Yep. Or 35 years.
Mm-hmm. A couple of the pieces here. Cisco will be reporting earnings after the closing bell on Wednesday. Now, John Chambers has been, you know, he was really negative on the global economy back in, let's call it 2007-ish, 8. Definitely in 09. I mean, he was
I always got the sense that he was short and regretting it.
Maybe, but he was very much, this is not a guy that's, everybody saw him at the time as a realist. And, you know, that he really saw what was going on. Everybody else was out there saying all these great things. And he was out there saying, hey, look, what we're seeing is this. And it's really not what everybody else is seeing. And at the time when he first came out with the real negative commentary back in whatever it was, 2008, 2009, I mean, it really shook markets. Now, of course, sentiment has changed. And if he comes out and he's negative again, he was last quarter, he's a kook. Right?
Yeah.
He's out of touch.
That's true.
Out of touch. Doesn't know what's going on.
But they're going to want to get rid of him.
Yeah, exactly.
They've been trying to do that every once in a while. They try to get rid of him.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't think he's going anywhere. He's like Larry Ellison, isn't he, for Oracle?
A little bit.
Yeah. Detroit's automakers are trying to sweeten discounts because they seem to have an incredible amount of unsold vehicles that are jamming their lots. Remember, they had this problem in China where the auto dealerships were having just a massive amount of cars in inventory, and China finally said, hey, guys, stop. You got to stop doing this. And there's a big price war going on in Detroit, it seems, or it's just at least starting. The initial stage of this is starting. There's so many cars on the lot. So once again, you know, we're seeing numbers being produced and the car makers producing, and, you know, now we're not keeping up with it. So who knows? Maybe we're going to start getting the next year's car in. You know, now it used to be like, what, November? We get the announcement coming in like July. So I'm waiting. We could see the 2015s come out any day.
Yeah, that would, well, they used to do. Well, yeah, it's a little. Well, no, a few years back they were pulling that stunt. They were bringing out 215s, and I think they did it with the last iteration of the Corvette. I think they brought that out a year early.
The new Corvette's instead, nice.
And I mean, by a year early, I mean like in March and April rather than normal. November, December, October, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
And in what seems to be a real problem, and maybe this is something that happened with a bit of maybe some kind of a mind-tricking mechanism or some other kind of underlying mechanism to maybe hypnotize people. The inventor of Flappy Birds, it's just this game that became a global phenomenon. Now, I saw this game. And
I've never seen this game. I still play Angry Birds.
It's not, the graphics are not as good. And what you do is you flap the wings of these guys and you kind of get them to go up and down and move over. And it seems that it became this major phenomenon. My son was showing me, I was somewhere, all these people in this restaurant playing this Fakakta game. And it was downloaded and played by millions. But whatever, the developer, Dong Nguyen, which I always have trouble with that spelling, that N-G-U-Y-E-N.
Yeah.
Dong Nguyen. Pulled it. He's a developer. As he's worried
that... Is that pronounced Nguyen?
I looked up the pronunciation and it's just did it tonight because I was tired of saying Nguyen or something.
Okay.
It said Win.
Win.
Pulled it because he was very worried that it was too addictive and was ruining people's lives.
Ah, publicity stunt. Good for him.
He pulled it. He can't get it anymore. It's off of the app stores.
Huh. What if you already have it?
I guess you could play it if you have it. He got all these angry letters of people that said they wish they never downloaded it and they would rather go to hell right now because they can't stop playing this game. I can't imagine. It didn't look very addictive to me when I saw it. I said, it just doesn't look great, this game. Although it looked better on the Androids than it did the iPhones. But people got addicted to it. Now, usually you'd find a company that happened to and be like, wow, when are they going public?
Yeah. You know, yeah, exactly.
This them guy
go public
is,
and fail later.
Yeah, this guy, he said something to the effect of, you know, he was supposed to be a game that you play for minutes a day, and now people are playing for hours upon hours, and they're tweeting their scores and all that, and it's just horrible. I don't know. This guy seems a little crazy. I mean, if McDonald's was run by this guy, they'd pull the products. Yep, people shouldn't be eating things that aren't good for you. The heavy amounts of grease and cholesterol is no good. You know what? I don't think we should be selling those burgers and fries anymore. He's either a great individual, an individual that should be emulated and it should be really revered, or the biggest idiot in the world.
Well, probably a little of both.
Uh-huh.
Looks like a publicity stunt to me.
All right. So when we go to our stocks, are we ready to go to our stocks yet?
Yeah, we're going to go to our stocks.
I got my tail is between my legs.
Well, you haven't got one in the green.
It's worse than that.
Okay.
Mm, it's bad.
I got most of mine are in the red. They're not big time in the red, except a couple. The shorts. Yep. The shorts have not paid off except one.
Yep. Which one was
it? It's a whopper.
Oh, yeah. Twitter. Yeah, yeah. That was beautiful right after their earnings. It really crashed down pretty hard. And it was actually low as it was low as it was probably about, let's see, it was probably about 5% better. But
well, yeah, it's not 10% better.
Let's take a look down to that last one there.
Your favorite.
Well,
you shorted it again.
Let me tell you something. This doesn't tell the story. You see, Green Mountain Roasters came out with their earnings. And when they came out with their earnings, which is the same day as Twitter, by the way, they halted the stock. I'm thinking to myself, you know, traditionally halting has been, you know, a negative situation, right? You know, yeah. They're trying to disseminate news, and it's been negative, but I don't know. I've seen some recent halts that have been for positive news. So time goes on, a few minutes, 20 minutes. There's an announcement. It's not their earnings either. It's an announcement that Green Mountain has sold 10% of the interest of the company or the value of the company to Coca-Cola. Because Coca-Cola is now coming up with a product that they're going to joint market called the Keurig Cold, which is going to dispense Coke. Okay. They sold the shares to them at $74, which was below the price it was currently trading. So that's interesting. They're actually going to be create a dilutive transaction. They're going to issue more shares. Well, that's kind of negative. So I'm thinking, okay, interesting, negative. And it's still halted. They come out with the earnings. And the earnings missed on the outlook. I'm still halted. So I'm thinking, okay, you got Coca-Cola involved. That's probably a positive. And then you got the negative earnings. And you got the, okay, so it was about $84 it was trading at the time, right? It opens at $112. And if you track it to where it is today, which is only a few days later, it's a 50% increase from the entry point that we had here at $76. So,
well, I guess you zigged when you should have zagged.
Oh, it shouldn't have been a zig or a zag. It should have been get the hell out. You know, what's interesting.
Well,
here's a
you've
lesson.
Always had bad luck with this company.
Yeah, we've had a couple times that have been very good. But let me tell you what the interesting thing is about this. One of the lessons learned about this is that when you have a stock that has a lot of skeptics involved and the stock, even in a major market sell-off, kind of holds in there, you know, it stays in there. It doesn't really sell off very much prior to the earnings, no matter what happens, everything around it. You know what? If you're short, get the hell out. Something's not right. If it's acting too strong,
yeah.
And, you know,
no, it's to be avoided. It's got too many red flags.
Exactly. So what's really interesting is that you would think right away, hey, hold on, let's think. They're making a device that dispenses soda. Now, who could be hurt by that? Or who could be helped?
Right. Your friends with Scarlett Johansson. She could be hurt by this.
Yes. SodaStream. So SodaStream stock, you look, up, announcement comes out, stock's down 15%. Okay? Now, if you went to sleep and woke up, you'd be like, what the heck was that? Because since then, the scuttlebutt has been, well, this is actually going to be good for them. I'm thinking, really? How is that? Well, maybe Pepsi will come in and buy them. Or, you know, participate in something, right?
Wow, these guys are getting more creative with their imagination.
Yeah, so Pepsi's going to come in and do something with them, and, you know, they give all these reasons. Now, the only thing I can tell you is, if you think about it, number one, because there's another product competing on the market, you would think that the people that were going to buy a SodaStream product may say, you know, maybe I'll hold off to see what the other product's going to be when it actually comes out, because it's not out yet. It's not even really designed or anything like that yet. So maybe I'll hold off to see what's going on with that. You may say that, you know, some people may buy, but yet at the same time, you probably think that it's going to be a little bit of a slowdown in the sales for SodaStream, right? Well, you should take a look at SodaStream's chart. Doesn't seem to really care about any of that. Because when it opened the next day, it was up about 10%. Now, it did fade down a bit. It was up another 6.5% today. And since the day that the Green Mountain partnership was announced with Coke, you would think that maybe SodaStream is part of this deal as well. Mm-hmm. Because, let's take a look here. Let's take a look at 1 month chart. It went from, on the 5th, it was about, 36, and now it's about, 45? 43.
Yeah, I'm looking at...
It's up a chunk. In the last 5 days, it's up 20%. That's when the announcement happened.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, it was floating around 35 just a short time ago.
Mm-hmm.
That's almost 44.
Yep. It was downgraded on February 6th.
Sometime back.
SodaStream International up on a possible PepsiCo deal. Hey, I like that. So there you go.
Nobody knows that.
I understand. I'm just telling you. You know, but now you don't want to really step in front of it, right?
Turns out that Royal Crown Cola buys them.
Tab is picking up. I am telling you, I am looking forward to the day that Green Mountain actually comes out with, I told you, the shaving, the hot shaving lather shaver, where they put a little K-cup filled with compressed and condensed shaving cream. And you put it in there and you just get a hot lather out of it. Why not?
Why not?
I mean, they don't even have to do anything about the machine. Somehow
they sell a second machine to everyone.
Yeah. You don't even need a second machine.
It kind of looks like a lather machine anyway.
Yeah, doesn't it? Just a little bit taller. There's all sorts of things you could do. You know, create a device right inside the K-cup that when you press it, it comes out with massive amounts of steam, right? Just steam only. And you can clean your jewelry with it.
There you go.
All sorts of things you can do with hot water.
You get on the board for this company.
Yeah, I mean, because the coffee sucks. Coffee is awful through there.
Yeah, I know. The coffee in all those machines is just mediocre.
It's awful. They pass it through in 3 seconds, not even to give it a chance.
There's no brew time. Yeah, it's bogus.
Yeah.
But a lot of people rave about it. Oh, it's so good. And I think it makes a lot of people think they actually got a real coffee machine or a cappuccino machine.
Oh, boy, no.
Don't you think? This is just all psychological?
Yeah, it is. Well, especially because there's a Newman's brand coffee. I mean, this guy's in everything. He's got wine. He's got this guy, Newman. He's crazy. He's got wine. He's got salad dressings. He's got coffee.
About Newman's own.
Yeah.
Run by the daughter of the Newmans, two Newmans.
They have a selection of products that's amazing.
I know. She's a pretty aggressive marketeer.
Yeah.
She's got a really good scheme, too. Her scheme is to, like, really promote the organic angle, the free trade angle, and all those angles. She was one of the initiators of all those bogus, types of, we can get more money. We can charge a premium because we got some sort of a crazy stamp on our thing from the World Wildlife Federation.
Well, on our stocks, just to let you know, this is not an offer to buy or sell any security. And, of course, this is just a game that we play. And if you're going to buy a stock or a security or anything that we mention, you should really seek some professional advice and do so with the knowledge that there's a lot of risk involved. So, American Eagle Outfitters, that's doing pretty well. Now, don't forget, since last week.
Turn the corner.
Yeah, markets have come down and then shot back up. So, there was a turn going on there. Finisar is finally moving back up. Interesting, it kind of moved down pretty well and then just sitting there. But, the rest of our stuff is the buys and the sells, the shorts and the longs. I mean, Yahoo is up 7%. Netflix is up 7%, which means the shorts are no good. IBM.
Yeah, Yahoo is going to, I keep watching. I'm glad I've shorted it because I'm probably going to get closed out because I still think it's one of the great short potentials at some future date. And it's better to follow it like this and get burned and burned and burned. And then actually at some point actually short it.
Or buy a put on it. You know, what's interesting about Yahoo is...
Yeah, put's the same thing.
What's interesting about this is this, you did this after the earnings came out. And I'm it's amazing the rebounds that some of these are making on, crappy earnings.
Yeah, well, Netflix is, as far as I'm concerned, is the same thing.
Yeah, I mean...
IBM, which I think is your pick.
Yep.
Bounce back. Twitter is the only one that really paid off.
Yep. And IBM is still, I'm more convinced as the days go on that IBM is like a shell that is just a financial re-engineering, a financial engineering deal, and that investors will catch on to this soon.
Yeah. I agree with you.
Yeah, Buffett's a big holder of that, I believe. And you got your global brass and copper holdings up 2%, the ever famous global brass and copper holdings, by the way. Some insiders. Now, I looked at Caterpillar. Now, Caterpillar is getting to the high level of where it has been before. It was down in the 80s for a while there. And actually, their numbers came out and didn't look so great for a while, and then they picked up a bit. But if a couple of the indicators that we have here are looking at a move that we call an exhaustion move. It's to a point that we get certain indications and certain levels that are way beyond the normal move of the stock, and it's kind of way beyond that at this point. And we're seeing some of the shorter-term indicators within there starting to roll over a little bit. So the big question is, you know, well, we have the news last night that we have machine orders and all that from Japan really dropping off a cliff, right? You would think that should affect Caterpillar. You would think. You know, and the questionable exports and all that from China, I don't think that matters much. So obviously, unless it's because the Dow is just moving up, I think that there's some downside in Caterpillar. Other than that, I'd really like to see what happens with these markets before making any other kind of major, entries here, because it's a mess right now. I mean, you know, it's a tale of just anywhere and anything that goes. So I'm sticking with just one right now.
Okay.
You have any?
Yeah, I do. I have one. I'm going to go. I like this, the chart. And I like the fact that one guy, the CEO and chairman, is buying up the stock as much as he can, even though it's only in the few millions of dollars, but it's still quite a bit because he keeps doing it. Mm. OPCO. OPK. Oh,
back to that guy again.
Yeah.
Phil is buying OPCO.
Philip Frost.
Phil Frost.
Yeah, Phil Frost.
And you're going to do a long on that. Buy.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not going to short anything now because I think that the with this – Unless that crazy little chart we looked at the beginning of the show pays off and the whole thing collapses, which, you know, I don't think will happen. But if it does, then we can have a lot of fun on the short side. But I'm not going to.
Is there another
way.
Symbol here? There's something with this OPCO. What's the symbol? OPKO?
OPK.
Oh, they changed the symbol. So now they may be New York based. Yeah. OPCO Health. Yep, it's $7.81. Where was it recently?
Well, it bounced around quite a bit. It had a big up, like, I don't know when it was, but it was a while ago. But it's been as high as 12, I guess.
Hmm. And there's a big...
I guess it bounced off to 13 last October, November. And it was like, you know, it's a $5 stock, and then it skyrocketed, and then it collapsed. And now it looks like it's picking up again.
Yeah, this is
somebody knows something.
Well, and the big issue is that Phil Frost is the chairman and CEO of OPCO as well as Teva, TEVA. Right. And one of the big issues is you wonder, wait a minute, does he know and does he plan on somehow rolling OPCO into Teva one day? And that's why you're getting such nice movement, why he's personally buying so much of it.
Yeah. And there's something fishy about this run up to 13. If you look at this chart, it's like somebody, like if you look in September area where there's like a kind of a build up of interest and people are like buying in. And then I guess the number of shares were becoming scarce. And then a lot of the volume went up and the thing skyrocketed. And then it kind of like dripped back down. It got people lost interest. There's a huge sell off about... looks like end of December with a lot of high volume, and it drove the stock down to $9, and then it just drifted back down to $7.
I think that was the time. There's been a bit of a controversy with the board and Phil.
Oh.
So okay. There's some kind of thing going on because of Teva in particular, that there was some internal issue going on, and there was some fighting that was going on or is going on. And I think that put a little bit of a shower of cold water on the whole deal.
Maybe.
That's what I think.
Well, the insiders own 6.9%. The insider transactions are 238% of the trades.
Wow.
And the institutions own 14.8%. And the institutional transactions are actually down to minus 3.42%.
So the institutions have like a minority interest. That's interesting. You don't see that quite often.
Yeah, this is a very interesting possibility here.
Yeah, you don't see that very often. You usually see that institutional ownership is, you know, in the 50s plus. So we'll take a look at that. I'll mention also, by the way, tomorrow, Wednesday the 12th, there is a webinar that we're putting on at 2 p.m. on our Aileron indicator for TradeStation, which is actually the one that I use to get the Caterpillar. Now that I think about it, the Caterpillar exhaustion move and the crossing. So we're going to be doing that at 2 o'clock. It's a webinar. You can sign up for that over at triggercharts.com. It's a free webinar, and you can see what's going on and what all the big flap is about. And by the way, if the indicators we have become very addictive and, you know, to a point that people are unable to break away from their computers, I am not going to pull it from the market.
Well, that's a good thing.
Yeah. Just letting you know.
We just hope you don't. All right.
All right. Anything you want to announce? Anything going on? You got No Agenda Show. We got The Real Dvorak on Twitter, which maybe you have a new profile page that you don't know about yet.
I might. I have to go look.
We got Dvorak.org/blog. We have your great book that you can download.
I'm working on another version of the 2014 version.
Oh, really? So you like the car companies? Well, you want to call it the 2015 version? It's really fresh.
I could.
You know what I'm saying?
I might do that, actually.
Yeah, it's like a really, really, really advanced information.
Yeah, that way I can let it linger longer.
It's always good to let things linger longer, if you know what I mean. Well, I'd like to say in closing, please check out, we're going to have the bullshit meter on the DH Unplugged website right in the middle there. We'll put all the information we talked about today on there as well, and have some of the links to some of the stories that we talked about as well. So go over to DH Unplugged. You can check out all of this and, of course, download this on iTunes and see the information that we talked about, plus find out all about the weekly stock picks right on our site, what's going on with them, how they're faring or not, live through this beautiful Google spreadsheet. That's all I have.
Okay, well then we'll see you again on Tuesday of next week.
I look forward to it. See you then.
All right, adios.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, cause I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pocket, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a mint. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.